We've got a problem, Glyn. We've got a crisis, I think.
We have, or you have?
No, we. We.
We? What?
Definitely
what?
We, yeah. And our credibility, if we have any left, is at risk.
Oh.
I was doing the research for today's podcast yesterday. You know, I did a little bit of homework.
Yeah.
And I was researching something about the walk that we're going to talk about. And I thought, oh, I'd not noticed that before. So I Googled it. And the first two returns, you know, numbers one and two, the first reference material that Google was pointing me to, was Hidden Wiltshire. So we're marking our own homework, in effect. and bearing in mind we just talk complete shit and we make stuff up, that's very, very dangerous.
You just swore as well. I'm going to have to bleep.
Oh yes, sorry. That's another quid in the swear box.
Exactly.
But yeah, this is not good. People are taking us too seriously.
Well, Google is.
Well, Google is, yes.
Welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. This is podcast 19. And, sorry, I just have to start again because I've just looked at my... I've got my Word document up with your itinerary on and it says episode 19, The Coffin Trail, Running Gorton.
Oh,
so I was totally thrown by that. So I was just going to say, episode 19, The Coffin Trail. I'm like, no, we did that last time. Anyway, right. So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire...
Why not just leave that other bit in? It's quite funny. just leave it in. But what we can do is jump in now and say, actually, no, it's not the Coffin Trail at all. It's
okay. So we are here at another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, episode 19. It's not the Coffin Trail. That was last time. anyway, we'll get to Beckhampton Gallops before too long. But before we do that,
I blame the staff. He just can't get the staff these days.
I know. Actually, I need to pay better wages. I think.
Well, you do, or some would be good. who puts this bloody running order together anyway? Oh no, hang on, that's me.
Let me think about that one.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness me. Before we start the podcast, and by the way, we need to do intros, don't we?
Mm.
My name is Glyn Coy. I'm the face and voice behind the Hidden Wiltshire thing. And with me, as always, I have my podcasting partner.
Paul Timlett, the unpaid lackey who just mucks everything up.
And carries my bags.
And carries your bags.
Before we get started...
This is all going horribly wrong.
It is. This is not very professional. Before we get into the main topic this week, we're going to talk about the last couple of weeks in Wiltshire and just do a bit of a roundup.
Yeah.
So, something about your aunt's funeral.
Yeah, well, actually, this is a fairly sober subject, really, as you would expect from a funeral. But, yeah, I went to my aunt's funeral earlier in the week, which was very, very touching. And I was very close to my aunt. We were a close family. We were, you know, as kids, and myself and my cousins, we all grew up together, similar age. So it was you know, a very touching funeral. And, as, you know, as you do, you sit there and you're listening to the eulogy, which was read by my cousins. Very, very talented daughter, Hannah, who is a doctor of child psychology, very talented young lady. And she read this sort of eulogy beautifully. And it was written by her aunts, so my cousins. And they were talking, so my aunt and uncle were, they were together for 76 years and married for 73 years. I mean, can you believe that? Some people don't even live that long.
I know.
But they were talking about my aunt's life, and she left school, I think, when she was 14, and started as a typist in a solicitor's office in London. And this will resonate with you, with your legal background. And she was apparently when she was a very clever woman, but left school with, you know, very few qualifications, and she was so good that when the solicitor was indisposed, in quotation marks, she would go to court and basically represent the firm and the client as a typist and do it very well. I mean, can you imagine getting away with that these days?
Never get away with it these days.
It's just extraordinary.
Yeah.
And my uncle, who, bless him, I mean, he's 90, I think he's 95. I mean, God, you know, just the vision of a broken man, really. It was just so sad. But he is an equally talented man, but in the war, he started off as a Navy pilot flying Swordfish, you know, the torpedo aircraft, which are made of sort of balsa wood and string, basically. I mean, horrendous things. But he was very lucky. He never actually saw any action. So I think he was flying Swordfish, patrolling the seas off Canada. And then from there, he went on to be a pilot in Catalinas, you know, the flying boats.
Yeah.
And he spent the rest of the war basically bobbing around the Caribbean. So they were a bunch of, you know, late teens, early 20s guys. And he once told me this, that he said it was the best years of his life, which doesn't say a lot for my aunt, I know. But, you know, he was flying around the Caribbean and they'd find a nice spot of sort of, you know, indigo-coloured water, put the ship down and all pile in the back and have a fry-up, bobbing around in the Caribbean Sea whilst the war, you know, horrendous war was being fought across the world. And that was his war. That's all he saw.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just struck me. I've always been interested in sort of social history, and I know we've become a bit of a history podcast, and I saw with horror that you seem to be doing a lecture at a history society. I mean, do they know what they've booked, or who they booked?
They do. They're fans of the podcast, actually.
You know, social history has always interested me. I can't stand sort of kings and queens and all that sort of stuff, and I've got a terrible memory for dates and things, which is why I was hopeless when I did my legal exams as part of my professional qualifications. I could never remember the days of the names of the case or the dates, so I would just say there was this case with a snail in a
bottle. Oh, yeah, that's my speciality. I have a law degree, you see, so
I know.
Memorise those to death. I learnt the names of thousands of cases, believe me.
Yeah, well, I just couldn't do it. I'd sit there and cram it, and so I'd end up just saying, well, there was this case, and you know, I can't remember the date, and I don't know who it was, but it was this. And it was the same with kings and queens. But what's far more interesting is the lives of ordinary people, and that's my point about this little intro, is that the sort of social history, and, you know, who cares about kings and queens and all the rest of it, and governments, it's about sort of real people.
It is,
and
it is, and that's the thing that gets me is as well. When I'm quite into what people call landscape archaeology, and that's about, you know, finding ancient history and prehistory, prehistoric stuff in the landscape. But for me, it's all about thinking about the people.
Yeah.
Who were these people that lived there, and how did they live, and how were they interacting with each other? We don't really know, but it's just. It's good to kind of think about it.
I think, if, you know, even people like my uncle, who, you know, at 95, bless him, you know, he's you know, he's approaching the end of his life, and unless we sort of, you know, capture these people's stories about what life was like, sort of, you know, he was born in the early 1920s, mid 1920s, and what was life like when he was a lad and growing up, and, you know, unless we sort of capture those stories, it's lost forever, because it's not going to be written down anywhere. But to your comment about sort of landscape archaeology, did you describe it, sort of neatly brings us on to the talk we went to on Sunday, isn't it?
Yes.
Andrew Zeminski.
Yes, our favourite stonemason.
Yeah.
Who's now a friend of the podcast because he's been on it.
Yes. I don't suppose he listens, but he has been on it. But, we went to see him in Toppings, the bookshop. In Bath. Was it Sunday? Yeah, Sunday evening.
Sunday night, yeah.
Yeah. And he was just riveting, absolutely fascinating. And what struck me was he obviously had done about as much preparation for that talk as we do for this podcast, because after about 5 minutes, he looked at the... the lady who was sort of hosting for topics and said, "Is that it? Can I stop now?" and he just started, but he'd obviously done no preparation, but it was just fantastic. And he had all these tools with him, the tools of the trade, which looked as though they were tools that had been used for hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
Yeah, but the thing is, he was talking about the fact that the tools that he uses now are the same tools that were used in prehistoric times. Yeah. Nothing's changed when it comes to working stone.
No. But he, yeah, I mean, he sort of really brings the landscape alive. And we've talked about him a couple of times, so I think we're in danger of becoming fanboys here.
Fanboys.
And of course, we've now got, between us, I think we've got four copies of his book. Right, what else have we done?
We did a Hidden Wiltshire walk with the museum crowd. That was Earlstoke Wood and Salisbury Plain. Well, we went up and we did a bit of... We went up through the woods. It's quite steep as well there when you go up onto the escarpment. And then went over to the sort of field where they filmed 1917 or part of it. Had a bit of a chinwag about that, then headed back. I mean, it's very picturesque up there.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It's really nice. You get views across to the Pusey Vale. It's just very, very pleasant. So,
good. I didn't realise until you, because you wrote a blog about it afterwards, and you dropped that clip of the opening scene of 1917.
Yeah.
I'd never noticed until then that the opening scenes were filmed by the lollipop tree.
Yeah, they were.
So it begins and it ends at the same place.
That was a fascinating thing for me. When I went up the first time, it was last year before the lockdowns all started, I went to the actual specific trees that opened the film where they're leaning against the tree. And I held my phone up and got that opening clip up in front of me and was able to perfectly match the scene.
Just aligned it. Yeah.
Just aligned it. So on my phone, I'm watching the film and then with my eyes, I'm looking up and seeing the actual vista that's in the movie. It's fascinating.
So that those trees, this won't mean anything to anybody who hasn't been up there, but that was where we were looking over to the lollipop tree out across the Imber Range. There was some trees further along the field to our left.
Yes.
It's down there, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's down there.
I thought I'd recognise that, yeah.
I think the actual tree, I went back recently, well, not recently, a few months ago, and the actual tree that he was leaning against has become damaged. It looks like it's been either been hit by lightning or just rotted away and snapped off, but the actual tree at the start where he's leaning against, it's not quite intact anymore. It's a bit of a shame. Yeah,
actually, because we didn't actually go out to the tree. You can, I mean, because the danger area, the live firing area, is marked beyond the tree, so you can walk out to the tree, and it's sort of open access, so you can walk up to it. But maybe too many people have been going up there to mooch around. I don't know.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about that in 2 weeks' time, aren't we?
Yeah, it was a terrific walk, and it's well worth. Doing a podcast on that one.
Also did something on Knapdown.
So that was kind of two new sort of longer blogs, wasn't it? Two new walks that we put up, the Earlstoke Wood and Knapdown, which I think we're going to do a podcast on as well, because that was a long walk, and I think I talked about it in the last podcast. But yeah, that was a terrific walk. Apart from the boring bit along the old Shaftesbury to Salisbury Road. Funny enough, my optician lives in Broadchalk. So I went to see him. Actually, I had an appointment on Saturday with him. So he was going to scurry off and have a look at the walk. I took him at Knapdown because I'd never heard of it before. And then, of course, you found that you'd taken some drone shots up there. He obviously, the optician, had been up there, been up to Knapdown as well, because he lives there. And even though it's on the outskirts of Broadchalk, I don't think many of the locals go up there either, because again, it's a bit of a trek,
isn't it?
It's a bit of a trek. It's a little bit steep, but it's not that far. And clearly people do go up there, because I said in the blog there were signs about, you know, keeping your dog on a lead. It actually might even have said no dogs, I'm not sure. So obviously people do go up there. But yeah, we'll talk about that more at some point.
Yep. So I think that's it, really. We're ready to talk about this week's topic, Beckhampton Gallops. So Beckhampton Gallops, and well, this is called the blog post I put up about this is called Beckhampton Gallops and Witches Plantation. But actually, I looked at the map in preparation of this morning, and on the map it's called Witch Plantation, not Witches Plantation. So I need to change that on the website. Curiously named Witch Plantation.
I think I don't know where I've written Witches. What did you call it?
Witches. I call it Witches the website, yeah.
Sorry, the feed dropped out for a moment there, so I didn't hear what you said. But, yeah, I think on the map, as you say, on the 1 to 25,000, it's Witch Plantation, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that was one of the things I was researching. I couldn't find any reference to Witch Plantation either. Anywhere.
It's a fairly big plantation as well, actually. It's quite beech trees and looks quite eerie, you know.
Yeah.
A bit like Furze Knoll.
Yeah.
A little bit of mystery about it.
But if I remember rightly, because I did that, I think I mentioned last time when we were talking about this that I'd done a variation of the walk that you did, and I carried on to Cheryl Monument and Cowstone and down and all the rest of it, but I don't remember the plantation at all.
Yeah,
and I think it was as you were heading from the car park towards, I mean, we'll talk about this more in the direction of Cheryl Monument. It's down to your left, is that right?
Well, it's on your way back. So on my route I took, I went over to the sort of outskirts of Cheryl Down, but didn't quite go over the top towards where the monument is. Right. I then started to turn back on myself and come back around the perimeter of the Gallops. And it was just there. It's on the sort of east side of the National Trust land at Cheryl. So there's the rights to roam over it and everything.
I meant to write down the date, because you wrote a blog about it, and I meant to write down the date. It was, if people want to follow along, it's July, wasn't it?
It was July.
I wrote it, but you know, you can find it easy enough. It is called Beckhampton Gallops and Witch's Plantation, isn't it?
Yeah.
But there's a map. You put a map at the bottom.
Yeah.
But tell us about the walk.
Well, before I get on the walk, I'm just going to talk about the Gallops.
Okay.
Because this is, it's like a triangle of land west of Beckhampton roundabout. So Beckhampton is, you know, that roundabout on the A4 where you can go up to Avebury, or you go across to Silbury Hill. It's a sort of quite an important junction. You can go in many different directions, but it's a triangle of land west of that roundabout, that has a Roman road to the south, the A4 to the north, and to the west is Cheryl Down. And it's a fairly big expanse of land, and most of it is owned, some of it on the west side is owned by the National Trust, but a big chunk of the Gallops is owned by a racehorse training person, Roger Charlton, Beckhampton Stables. So they train racehorses there, including quite a few of the Queen's horses. Although there are some rights of way around the perimeter, he does allow the public to walk on the land after midday, because in the mornings they're training the horses, but after midday he basically says to the locals, you know, you're free to roam.
He's
very generous of him.
Are there signs to that effect?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's a car park just off the A4.
Yeah.
Which is quite a big car park, and there are signs there in terms at the entrance points onto the land that say, you know, this isn't, pretty much says in a nutshell, this isn't public access land, but you are welcome to come on here after 12 o'clock. But having said that, I did, in the research, I found a news report in the Gazette and Herald last year, where he was, very tempted to start closing off the access because of people disrespecting the land.
God.
In lockdown, of course, what happened is a lot of people that wouldn't normally walk in the countryside went walking in the countryside, ignored the signs, would come onto the land before 12, with dogs off leads, upsetting the horses. And a couple of times, or at least one time, when he tried to sort of say to people, you need to leave this place, he got threatened with violence, which is terrible. And then, of course, you've got all the other issues of dog poo bags just dumped around, empty cans of beer, water bottles just left on the land, which is all very dangerous to the horses. So, yeah, I just despair when I hear about this because I think it's such a generous thing of him to do to let people walk on quite a wide expanse of land, which is a beautiful place, and a minority screw it up for the rest of us.
Yeah, and it's, you know, is it any one of the MOD also get you know, a bit angsty about the whole access to Salisbury Plain thing? And
yeah.
Again, during lockdown, people were abusing that, and you know, you know me about sort of private land and all the rest of it, and
yep.
At some point it was common land, but you know, at the end of the day, when somebody's trying to make a living out of using that land, I mean, you know, we should all respect it, and
yeah,
you know, you don't go tramping around a farmer's crops. Well, some people do. Does remind me of the sunflower field between Shrewton and Tilshead. I think I mentioned to you, I saw people tramping around there and coming out with great armfuls of flowers the other day.
Yeah.
So that's somebody's crop that they're stealing. Anyway, don't get me started on that one. But yeah, just as you say, people perhaps aren't used to walking in the countryside, and what is there to understand? I just don't get it. I don't understand why they don't understand.
Yeah, I don't either. It's a mystery to me, but apparently some people would also complain that when he would ask them to leave the land, they'd say he had no right to do that. Because, and I was thinking, well, he has every right to do that, and he could quite easily block off access completely. But anyway, that's my rant over.
But I did notice when I did that walk, which was a few years ago, or a variation of it, and I parked in the same car park as you, and you know, the scourge of the dog poo, I mean, all along that path, along the top, along the old Bath Road, it was just everywhere. It was disgusting. It really was.
Yeah. But when I visited, I think it was in June, I visited as well. I went up to the car park, and that quite a lot of the land on the Gallops is actually farmed as well, so it's arable. And a big chunk of it is farmed by Gultymoor Farm from Beckhampton, and I think it was in June. I met the farmer up there, and he opened up the gate and let me drive down onto the Gallops, because I was doing some drone filming of him driving his tractor around. And that's what gave me the idea, really, to kind of go back and explore the area a bit more. So that sparked a seed. So I came up with this route, and I went back to the car park in July, one evening, actually. It was when the nights were very long, and I thought there wouldn't be too many people around, and I was absolutely right. I didn't see a single soul on the walk that evening. So from the car park, there's a footpath. It's a right of way that takes you above the Gallops along a ridgeway. I think it's part of the Wessex Ridgeway long distance path.
Yeah, it is. It's that's absolutely what it is, which is in turn part of the old, if it exists, we've talked about this many a time, the great Ridgeway, or the Greater Ridgeway, that goes from the Wash to Lyme Regis, supposedly. So the Wessex Ridgeway is a section of that.
Yeah.
And I think our section, the Wessex Ridgeway, goes from, where does it go? Dorset to, that's right, it's Bath to Marlborough, that stretch.
Yeah,
I think,
could well be.
That section, yeah. And you kind of parallel south of the A4, aren't you? The existing A4.
Yes, you're following the road.
Yeah.
In fact, it's called, on the map, it's called the Old Bath Road. I guess that must be the original road then.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. But yeah, you go through some woodland and come out the other side, and then you've got this wonderful vista where you're looking across the Cheryl Down. You can see the Lansdowne Monument poking up in the distance. yes, you're just following that ridgeway along. It's a really nice view. And as you're there, it is possible to drop down from the ridgeway onto the gallops and the fields around there. And again, it's you've got this, you know, obviously you don't walk on the crops, but around the crops there are multiple pathways to wander. It's a very nice place.
If I remember rightly, you get views off to your right to the north as well, don't you?
Yes, you do.
Sort of, you know, Windmill Hill and Avebury direction.
Yeah.
So you really are on top of a ridge there, ridgeway there, with just, as the name suggests, you know, Wessex Ridgeway, with just huge sweeping views.
Absolutely. And I remember once walking up there on a summer's evening and seeing the combines down below cutting the crops, they're harvesting the fields in the summer. It was just really nice. It's very Wiltshire, very rural scene, I have to say.
Yeah.
But there is quite a bit of ancient history along here as well. So along that ridge, you've got an earthwork that stretches pretty much the whole length from the car park, all the way up to Cheryl Down. And at various points, you can see it in the landscape. Fascinating.
What do you know what that is? Because I that's one of the things I was Googling yesterday. So in fact, you get on the 1 to 25,000 map, you've got a tumulus marked.
Yeah,
which is right by the old Bath Road, you know, the Wessex Ridgeway. So that seems to be just off to the right. Actually, no, I do remember that. I do remember seeing that tumulus. And then the earthworks are off to the left, aren't they? So north and south, respectively. Yeah. So do you know anything about the earthworks?
I don't know. No. It's one of those things. There's another earthwork down the south-east part of the Gallops, which is called... On the map, it's called Hare Pit Way.
Yeah.
And that's very visible as well. You can actually see it's like a track. So whether these are old tracks, I don't know.
Actually, I meant to Google Hare Pit Way and completely forgotten about that, because that's written in sort of the old script, which I think indicates a sort of ancient monument on the OS maps. Do you know anything about that, Hare Pit Way?
No, I don't.
Well, we need to make some stuff up, don't we? So, so no idea what the earthworks are. We don't know what Hare Pit Way is. So we need to invent something.
Here we go. I've just pulled it up. I'm talking about improvisation. Hare Pit Way linear boundary on historic England. So what does it say? It talks about ceremonial and ritual activity during the Neolithic and Early Bronze Age periods.
Right. And if you look immediately to the west of Hare Pit Way on the map, there's a cluster of tumuli there as well.
Yes.
So there was something going on.
Yeah, so it talks about ditches and banks, which pretty much mark boundaries. So who knows? Could have been marking the boundary between, you know, one tribe's piece of land and others.
Mm. But you look at the earthworks by the Wessex Ridgeway, they're pretty extensive, aren't they? I mean, they go sort of just west of the car park, and they follow that old Bath Road, the Ridgeway, for, wow, I mean, it looks like a few kilometres. It just goes on and on until pretty much to... Cheryl Down.
Yeah, it must be some kind of a Bronze Age boundary or something.
Yeah.
But it looks like Hare Pit Way was an ancient track, and it was adopted in medieval times as a proper trackway.
It's only very short, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's only a bit of it left.
Yeah, I mean, it probably sort of went on long before.
Yeah.
See, if we were proper professional podcasts, we'd have researched all this and we'd know what the hell we were talking about. But why break the habit of lifetime?
I know. You're giving the impression that we wing it every week, Paul.
What, you mean we don't?
But as you go along that path, it stretches for quite a way. And eventually you'll meet another... It's like a chalk path that's coming up the hill from the A4, heading up to Cheryl Down, where you turn a left and sort of head past... a waterboard underground reservoir, and again it's a tumulus around there. Lots of tumuli around this space, so it was obviously important in the Bronze Age.
Yeah, if you look at your map with the trace of the path. I mean, it's just, again, it's one of these areas where it's littered with monuments of some sort, earthworks, tumuli, then of course the Iron Age or Bronze Age, and then Iron Age hill fort at Albury Camp. This again is another very, very significant landscape in prehistory.
Absolutely. So at this point, the path sort of verges into two. If you head to the right, you're heading up to Cheryl Down to the boundaries of the Iron Age hill fort. If you veer left, you're going to sort of follow the boundary line of a field system. And the road is quite well marked here. And actually, I said I didn't see any people walking, but I did see a car flying along that road because it's an off-roaders
byway.
Road. It's a byway. Yeah. And actually, it was quite funny because as I was walking along, I thought the ruts in the road were really deep. I thought, God, there's no way on earth that's a car could make it up here. It's just crazy, absolutely crazy to drive on a road in this state.
Mm.
And about 10 minutes later, I had to sort of step off the road as a Land Rover Discovery went flying past. And I watched it go up the hill into the distance, and it managed to get through okay.
Yeah, it's extraordinary some of the terrain that these things will go through. And you know, my little car as well. They're just, incredible ground clearance.
Yeah.
But having said that, I mean, you do see people try some extremely stupid things in just ordinary road cars, and of course they then have to get hauled out.
Yeah.
Bit of an aside, but was back to sort of 1917, because the pond and where they built the French farmhouse for the film, and by that pond, and there was I think it was either 2018 or 2019, in that really sort of one of those harsh winters, deep snow, and I've got a photograph of this. Somebody driven a Peugeot 205 out there, and it was, they got to sort of by the pond there, and the ruts are really, really deep, but they did this, and it's bad enough in the summer, but in the middle of winter and snow, and there was this Peugeot abandoned in the middle of nowhere, and God alone knows how they got it out of there. I mean, the thing would have been a write-off because it was there for weeks, but you think the stupidity of people to try and take their cars in to these places, unless of course it was stolen and dumped, which is every likelihood.
But But one interesting thing here is, if you kind of look back down the gallops, you can see there's a vista that opens up. You're looking down towards the roundabout, and in the distance you can see Silbury Hill. Now, in this location, I've flown my drone here on two occasions. One was in the summer of 2018. It was really hot summer. We had weeks and weeks of no rain and severe heat through to the end of July, which totally dried up the landscape and made it go desert-like. It was brown. And then when I went back this year, we'd had a lot of rain in May, and it carried through into June, and the fields were bright green, really, really green, and lush colours, strong colours. So I put my drone up, and I'd managed to get the same shot 3 years apart from the same place, and I've put this on social media, so if you do a bit of look up some of my social media stuff, you'll see it. But I put the two photos side by side, and the contrast was astonishing. Yeah. It was like deep greens versus browns and savanna-like plains of the desert, you know.
Yeah, the photographs that you put with the the blog are just, stunning. I mean, they're pretty much all drone shots, aren't they? Apart from one or two, sort of obviously at ground level. Because I was looking at it, and you talked about the sort of looking out to Silbury Hill, and I thought I don't remember getting that perspective when I did the walk.
Yeah.
And of course, your drone would have been off, not from the route of the walk. It was probably slightly to the east somewhere looking at this.
Yeah,
but they're just, if you haven't read Glenn's blog, go and have a look. These photographs are stunning.
Yeah, and we'll come back to Silbury Hill in a minute when we talk about the Roman Road.
Yeah. When you were up there, you didn't go to the Albury Camp. You didn't go to the hill fort there.
I headed down to Witch Plantation.
Yeah.
So that's the byway that takes you down.
Yeah.
It kind of then, from Witch's Plantation, does a dogleg around a boundary. But it does bring you down to the Roman Road. Witch Plantation, no idea what it is, or what the history of it is, or how it got its name. That's all on open access land, so you can go for a wander in there if you would like to.
Yeah, it's right on the boundary, isn't it, of the open access, I think. It's so that track that you were on, coming from the direction of Geraldown towards Witch Plantation. I'm picking up your pronunciation. It's not plantation at all, it's plantation.
Plantation for us northerners.
it's right on the border of the open access area. I don't know, is it? I guess we can talk about Oldbury Camp on another podcast, do you think? Because I was sort of researching that yesterday and sort of reading up on it. I mean, again, sort of fascinating area, but it's just outside the area of the walk.
Yeah, we can cover that in another podcast. But another option is, I mean, I found this following the byway was actually, I wouldn't say dull, but it was, you know what it's like when you're walking on a road, it's not always the greatest of places to walk. And I was thinking, as that land's open access, that if I was going to do this again, I'd probably just dive off the road and walk across the hillside and find my own route across to join the byway at the other end.
So when I did it, as I said, I did a, you know, I hadn't seen your route. In fact, I did it several years ago. I mean, probably at least 5 years ago. So before you put that walk together. So I did go over to, actually walked along the Wessex Ridgeway. I went up to Cheryl Monument, had a sort of mooch around there and took in the views, the White Horse. And then from there, I just literally dropped down onto Cowstone Down.
Yeah,
which we've talked about before, and was the subject of another walk. So I think I kind of like put two, you know, one and a half walks together, if you like.
Yeah,
yeah.
There is another option to go up and skirt the outskirts of Oldbury Camp, and then drop down the Wessex Ridgeway to the Roman Road, right by Baltic Farm, and then it extends the walk by a couple of miles, maybe a mile or two.
Yeah. But it's well worth dropping down into, we've talked about it before, you know, to Ranscombe Bottom from there.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you didn't want to do like the Cowstone walk, which we've talked about before, I think, you know, you can do it from this walk, you know, so from Beckhampton, and then drop onto into Ranscombe Bottom, which is all open access. It's part of the same open access that Witch Plantation is in. And you can sort of, you know, cover all that area from there. But again, the history there is just astonishing, really.
I mean, the fascinating thing for me was when I dropped down to the Roman Road. Roman roads are great because they're very straight, and you get pretty good views from there. So it's almost like as I was looking west, I could look directly across to Morgan's Hill and see the radio towers on the top and Fursknoll. Mm. I think there's a photo of that on the
blog
post.
Yeah.
So you can see that. It's really good. And then looking back the other way, so following the Roman Road in the other direction, back towards Beckhampton, the Pusey Downs open up to your right, and you get this fantastic wild view of the Wansdyke snaking its way over the down. It's just absolutely stunning, and on a summer's evening, and as the light was falling, it was just perfect. Again, no people around at all. I had it to myself. It was wonderful.
So the shot that you posted of that, just going back to that now, that was another drone shot?
No, that was taken with my camera at ground level.
Okay. I thought I'd perhaps I seen it somewhere else. You did a drone shot up. Oh yeah, it was the Morgan's Hill Furs Knoll shot. That's a drone shot on the website. And yeah, looking sort of along the Wansdyke. Yeah, it's actually, I don't know. It's taken from an elevated position, that's for sure. But
I'm almost on a ridge, but high up.
Yeah.
So you're then looking across as it almost goes down into a valley.
Yeah.
And then comes up the other side.
So you're looking across the roads, the A3, 4, 5, or 5, whatever it is, from Devizes to Avebury. You're looking across that, and then way, way over to, as you say, you can see the Wansdyke sort of sneaking across the landscape up into the hills over by sort of Tan Hill and Milk Hill and that direction. Once again, just incredible views.
Amazing views. Really, really rewarding views as you're walking there.
And you can't walk, can you? You can't follow the Wansdyke all the way across, I don't think. So if you were, because of course the Wansdyke passes Furs Knoll and Morgan's Hill, and it crosses that A road that I mentioned just now. But I don't think you can. Can you continue to? Oh, it's the A361, isn't it? That road. You can't continue along the Wansdyke, or can you? No, you can.
There is
a public right of way.
Yeah.
I'm just looking
at that section of the Wansdyke. You can actually walk it all the way down to Walker's Hill.
Yeah. Yeah, looking at
that direction.
Looking at it on the map now, because of course we have talked about having a hidden Wiltshire walk that does that whole length through our region.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Roman roads, that was part of the London to Bath road, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah. So if you follow it back to Beckhampton, it's now a byway. And takes you all the way down to the A361. And I think the other side of the A361, it stops being a right of way because it goes across arable land.
That's what I was on about. But so you can't. So can you or can't you follow it all the way?
No, you can't. I mean, it's marked on the map.
Yeah, yeah.
The location of it. But I'm fairly sure you can't walk that way across.
Yeah,
it's part of Galty Moor Farms.
Okay. So
maybe in the winter you could wander across,
but it's not a public right of way.
Not public right of way.
Right. Okay. No.
But that takes you all the way directly to Silbury Hill,
where
it then joins the A4.
Okay. Sorry, I'm mixing up Wansdyke and the Roman Road. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the Wansdyke. Let's just be clear here. So the Wansdyke you can follow all the way across the A361, sort of east to west or west to east. But the Roman Road, as you say, it stops at the A361 at a place called Three Barrows.
Yeah. Oh no!
That's not the Roman Road either. It just stops. It's not marked as anything.
Yeah.
So you can see it. You can see the road, but it's not a public right of way.
Yep.
Got it.
So, but as you're walking along the Roman Road towards Beckhampton again, it kind of goes uphill. And then once you're over the crest of the hill, you get this tremendous view of the straight road pointing directly to Silbury Hill. And again, I put a photo on the blog of this. Where you see the Roman Road just going straight as a die. Now, the funny thing is that the first time I did this, I didn't have my proper camera with me. I just had my phone. So I took a sort of low light condition photo of that Roman Road leading to Silbury Hill and shoved it on Twitter. Just because I was so excited to share it, but it was a crap photo. It was awful. And of course, that's out of all these wonderful photos I take, that crappy one is the one that went viral.
Of course.
I think it was, the television guy, Neil Oliver.
Yes.
he picked it up and retweeted it, and he ended up, he follows me on Twitter now, but that all of his followers lapped it up, and it was. And the funny thing is, I kept getting a lot of people saying on that tweet then, but is it a Roman road? Because they were sort of contesting that Roman roads were actually built on top of existing Celtic trackways.
Yeah.
which is entirely plausible.
Yeah.
But I think the Romans industrialised it and straightened them all. But it could well be even older than Roman.
But you wonder, because when I was looking at that photograph, I think, why would a Roman road go to an ancient monument like that, to yeah. Silbury Hill?
Yeah.
I'm not saying they would go round it. In fact, no, the Romans, they'd just plough through it if they could. But, you know, what made them build the road there? Unless, as you say, they had just built their road over an old ancient Celtic track.
Yes.
Which did deliberately go to Silbury Hill.
It may well done. I mean, you've got, as you go further past Silbury Hill, of course, you're heading up to the old Ridgeway, which we know is very old trackway.
Yeah.
And some of these things, they could have all linked up. But it's plausible to think that, you know, there was a trackway going past Silbury Hill over towards Bath for thousands of years, because Bath, as we know, before the Romans, was a venerated site by the Celts. You know, they mm-hmm. had, you know, they worshipped their own god of the spring, Sulis. So, you know, all of these. And the funny thing is, I'm reading a fantastic book at the moment by. I need to get it. Hang on.
Oh, he's back. Here he is. He's got his book.
Yeah, so I've got this fantastic book I'm reading at the moment by Francis Pryor.
See it.
Scenes from Prehistoric Life. And he's really, because he's an archaeologist, he was a guy that was on Time Team.
Oh, that's it. I was trying to think where I knew the name.
Yeah, and he's well, he writes very readable books, but he's writing about the people of the prehistoric times and using his knowledge of archaeology over the years to really wrap some suggestions about how they lived. And he was very much of the fact that in prehistoric times, people were really well connected with these trackways, with the culture, with, you know, they were all communicating with each other, they were trading with each other, and much more sophisticated than we give them credit for. Just because they haven't written stuff down doesn't mean that they weren't sophisticated cultures. And I think we have, I certainly have had a tendency of thinking that, you know, the Romans civilized Britain, but actually,
no,
it's probably not true.
No.
We were civilized way before the Romans came here.
Absolutely.
But in a different way.
I was, when I was looking into Beckhampton, and sort of just sort of researching the history of that, and it's somewhere that was mentioned in the Doomsday Survey, but I found an old map, a really old map. It's quite a crude map, and I think it was from, if I remember rightly, the 17th century. And obviously, you know, Avery was marked, and if you can picture sort of Avery at the top of the map, sort of in the middle, and then we've got the avenue which comes, which still exists, that comes away from Avery and heads down to what is now the A4 and towards is it West Kennet? That sort of direction. So you've got that sort of avenue, but there's this map suggests that there was another avenue equally as important with many standing stones that ran to the west of Silbury Hill. So I'm not explaining this very well. So you've got Avery at the top, and then what I didn't say was at the south, you know, in the middle, at the bottom of the map was Silbury Hill. So they were centred.
Yeah.
I haven't got the map in front of me now, but I don't think they actually in reality are. But on this ancient map, you know, in the middle at the top, Avery, in the middle at the bottom, Silbury, the avenue that still exists to the right, to the east, in a sort of a curved shape, and then swinging round to Silbury. And then there was another one, it suggests, to the west, to the left of Silbury Hill, and sort of swinging round to meet at Silbury Hill, because there are still two stones that people sort of suggested were part of what was called Beckhampton Avenue. I think the stones, I think they're called the Tall Stones, and there's Adam and Eve. I think Adam is still visible. I'm not sure that Eve is still there or is very much eroded. So I don't know if there's any truth in that, and this sort of other, this second avenue that isn't really visible in the landscape anymore.
Yeah, fascinating.
But clearly, Silbury Hill, as we all know, was very important at those times when they built Avebury. I mean, I don't know in terms of chronology, did Silbury Hill come before or after Avebury in terms of the timeline?
Don't know. We'd have to check that.
Yeah.
Put it in the notes.
Yeah, yeah. See, again, if we were doing our job, we'd have looked that up. But, there's this ancient map. It all appears to sort of connect up. But, you know, bearing in mind this is the 17th century and they didn't have Google. But, fascinating landscape, full of prehistory. I think the Roman road, I guess, must have been built on something that already existed. Otherwise, why would it go to Silbury?
Yeah. Right, so just going back to...
You found it.
Isn't Google great?
Yeah. You've not come to a Hidden Wiltshire blog, have you? <We've searched.
laughs> Thankfully. The earliest earthworks at Avebury date between 3400 and 2625 BC.
Yeah.
And Silbury was later, 2400 BC.
So the avenues, I wonder if the two avenues, did they come after Avebury or at the same time? So in that 800-year period, yeah, or whatever it was, you know, I guess they built the avenue, or maybe the avenue predated it, I don't know. So maybe Silbury Hill was a significant site before they built the mound.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because West Kennet Long Barrow, that means West Kennet Long Barrow was there for around 1,000 years before they built Silbury Hill.
Right.
So this is the thing, is it's very tempting in our minds to think of all this stuff as being contemporaneous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That you have Avebury, you have Silbury Hill, yeah, and you have the Long Barrow, but actually...
It's about 1,000 years separate them.
It's 1,000 years separate. Yeah. There's a huge amount of history in this landscape.
So
the people that lived here.
So the avenue that we all know and love from Avebury South, you know, I guess would have led to West Kennet.
Yeah.
And then for some reason they plonked Silbury Hill along the line.
Yeah, but Silbury Hill's interesting because it's... Again, it makes me wonder whether it's been strategically placed, because if you walk down the ridgeway and look across to the Silbury Hill direction, you can just make out the top of Silbury Hill sitting in a valley, and it looks like a long barrow.
Yeah.
But it follows you as you walk. As you walk along, it's like this barrow is following you.
Mm.
It's as if it was designed to be seen from the ridgeway.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing.
Or some sort of crude, ancient, not crude, because it's a work of great engineering feat, but you know, a navigational beacon.
Yeah.
Because you can see it, because you're not going to be able to see ground level from up there.
No.
As you come over the crest of the hill. So maybe that was, you know, people, maybe did they bring their dead along the ridgeway and towards the barrow at West Kennet. In fact, there's another question for another time, I guess, was how many people were buried in West Kennet Long Barrow? Was it just one person?
No, it was many people and many generations.
Mm.
So, because they would move the bones to fit more people in. So it's, again, it's probably beyond the scope of this podcast, but there's a interesting history, and the question I have in my mind is, for what period, how long was the Long Barrow used before it was closed off? So we'll save that one for another day.
We need to get somebody on who knows what they're talking about.
Exactly.
I wonder if David Dawson's listening to this. he'd be horrified.
Yeah, we need to get him on, actually.
We do.
We can set the record straight on some of these things.
Yeah.
Okay, right. But anyway, from the Roman road, there are a few ways along the fence where you can clamber over. There are sort of bits of wood making little stiles, so you can clamber over back onto the gallops and make your way back to the car park, wherever you like. It's kind of a freedom to do, you know, get the best way back that you can find. And that's the walk over. I mean, hopefully it's given a flavour of the amount of history in the landscape. I mean, we talked at the start about landscape archaeology.
Mm.
If you want to get into that, this is a good place to start.
Yeah, yeah. The I know you sort of did it. Well, you wrote the blog in July. I'm not quite sure when you did the walk. Similar time, I guess. But when I did it, it was. I remember it being very, very cold. Must have been the winter at some point, and this incredible storm came in. It was a hailstorm. So as I approached the gallops from the sort of southwest, heading back up to that car park, the hailstorm was sitting over the knoll, the wooded knoll up by the car park, and it was kind of working its way towards me, and I took some black and white photographs as it was sort of sweeping down, and my God, it was dramatic. I might post one of those up on the Facebook page. And it was just biblical, and I can remember sort of trying to find some shelter somewhere from these hailstones, which are sort of trying to bury themselves in my skull. But God, it was cold. But yeah, I mean, don't dismiss the walk for the winter, because it's very very dramatic.
Yeah, and the pathways are pretty good as well, so they wouldn't get too muddy.
No,
so in the winter it would be a good walk to
do. I don't remember there being too much mud, but no, it's a fantastic walk.
Okay, should we wrap up?
Yeah. So there's one more Wiltshire Museum walk left, isn't there, for this year?
There is. On Sunday we're doing Devil's Den and Fifield Down, which will be the last one.
Is it this Sunday?
It is this Sunday, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Sunday the 12th.
I'm doing speed watch.
Well, get your priorities right, Paul.
Yeah, well...
But actually, don't worry. I mean, this one... sold out, I think. There's a lot of interest in this one.
Right.
If anyone's listening and would like to come, I think it's, unless someone cancels at the last minute, it's going to be hard to get a ticket. But yeah, this will be the last one for this year. I'm planning on doing maybe some more organised walks in the autumn and winter.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. They've been pretty popular, haven't they? So we should keep them going.
They have been, so yeah, we'll continue it on. I've quite enjoyed doing it. I've enjoyed meeting new people and people coming along who follow the website and listen to the podcast. Good to meet those people.
It's interesting when you sort of plot the walks, and they're not very long walks, but they always take much longer than you think. No. I mean, your wife has said a couple of times that you never allow enough time, but it's not a problem, is it? Because it's a very social thing, and people like to chat, and we stop and we admire
the
scenery.
Our time.
Yeah,
we do. I mean, it's funny because when I chose the routes, I thought we'll easily do this in 2 hours, and then sort of 3.5 to 4
That's
hours
right,
later, we're still
because
everyone keeps chatting and stopping, and then we do talk. We talk, point things out. If David from the museum's along, he'll usually have a box of tricks that he's brought from the archive.
And of course, if we do them during the winter, we have to adopt what Stu and I do when we do our walks together. We always take a hip flask with a wee dram in it, so it takes even longer then. So next episode we think is probably going to be the Earlstoke Wood and the Lollipop Tree walk. What else? Thanks to Steve again, Steve Dixon. So the music in the middle, which it's called The Borrowed Hand. I've got his agreement that that's probably the most appropriate one. See what you think, or tell us what you think. It reminded me of horses' hooves. That's why I sort of thought that one, because there's a tabla. Steve's playing a tabla in it.
Yeah,
sort of Indian.
We'll have to gather all the stuff we put on of Steve's music. We should gather that up and put it on the online shop.
Do it as a playlist. Well, I am doing it. I've got it all in whatever the Apple Tunes is. So I've got it as a playlist on there. Yeah, we should. And again, Steve's agreed to that. If we charge a fiver for it or something. To line his pockets, because he's doing all this for free. So thanks, Steve, for that. Lower Boots, bless them, still going. The discount, 20% discount. Lower.co.uk, HW20 for your 20% discount. And the website for the show notes, links, and of course the online shop,
which helps me keep my lights on. Thanks to everyone that's bought stuff through the shop. It's really appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely.
And We'll be doing a revamp of the shop, actually, between now and Christmas, so keep your eyes peeled.
Ooh, sounds exciting.
Yeah. But yeah, so we will be back in 2 weeks' time to talk about Earlstoke Wood
yep.
and Lollipop Tree. Until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Ta-da.